You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. The title race tightens at the top after Arsenal stake their claim and sweep aside Liverpool 3-1 at home. The problems at Chelsea pile on from Mauricio Pochettino after losing 4-2 at home to Wolves despite taking an early lead. Everton secure a crucial point in the relegation race as Jarrod Branthwaite scores a late equaliser against Tottenham. And Manchester United continue their recent bounce in form with a 3-0 win against West Ham. That's what we have coming up in today's episode.
OK, mate, there's absolutely only one place to start. It was the big game of the weekend at the Emirates, Arsenal hosting Liverpool. OK, before we get into any kind of detail, Robbie Musto, you weren't in studio this weekend. I know you were watching at home and copious amount of notes, but I want you to give me a sentence on your takeaway from this game. What was your biggest takeaway from a 3-1 win by Arsenal, a dominating Arsenal in the first half, conceded a late goal, had some disappointment, came back. Liverpool didn't quite play at the fluent best, even Klopp. But what's your takeaway, mate? What's the thing that you might hold for the season on that game did this?
I'll try and do it in one sentence. And that sentence would probably be Arsenal are not going anywhere. They're right back in the race, Rob. That's kind of what I feel like. I thought today was a defining game, particularly for Arsenal, given the vibe a little bit, given the recent results a little bit and being a little bit off the pace. This was a time to get back on track. And everything from the first whistle really to the last, Arsenal were pretty immaculate. The own goal, of course, was scored by Gabriel just before half-time, was really the only negative part of it. Other than that, the way they started the game, even the lineup, Rob, and, you know, there's a couple of big calls from Mikel Arteta. A couple of big calls going for Kai Havertz up front.
Yeah.
Jesus not ready to go. There's Nketiah, there's Trossard that could play a false nine. He continues to go with Kai Havertz. And Kai Havertz was involved in the first goal. And what I'll say before I get too much further into this, Rob, is, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Kai Havertz. I'm not his biggest fan.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, and now in this game, he worked like I've never seen him work before, unless I'm not watching enough for that side of him. Yeah. He played a false nine, so the up front. Yeah. He worked back. He worked his socks off, Kai Havertz. And I tell you what, fair play. Fair play from wide areas defending to central areas defending, Rob, to running in behind to closing down. He's got some engine, you know. He's got some engine. I'm not a huge fan of his finishing quality or sometimes his involvement and sometimes his body language and sometimes his, determination. All that being said, he worked really, really hard. And for that, I give him credit. But I'll let you come back in, Rob. It was a good day for Mikel Arteta and Arsenal. I like the change of system, by the way, but let me get, you know, what did you think? Anything different to that?
Takeaways from it. I thought, it was a huge day for Arsenal. I was stronger than maybe Tim and a few other people. I thought they lose today. They're not going to pull 8 games back in 8 points in 15 with City flying, with Liverpool then would have been flying, you know, if they'd have won the game. My biggest takeaway was, Rob, that played brilliant football, probably should have, you know, the football deserved to be more than 1-0 up at half-time. They go in 1-1. My biggest takeaway was the reaction to the disappointment of going in 1-1. I always worry about, don't worry when Arsenal's playing well, and today they were playing one of the best teams in the league and dominated the ball and pressed them in and won possession and looked more dangerous. But when a disappointment comes to Arsenal, as we saw last season, Rob, there's still for me a doubt about how this team might react. Now, I think they should be better, and I've often said, you know, I think they learned from last year. Declan Rice makes them better. Mm. I'll talk about Jorginho in a little while, that his experience helps them in those situations. But I just thought it was a big day for Arsenal to get over a big disappointment that could have gone another way, and they ended up winning the game.
I thought there was smart game management in the second half, Rob. Yeah. Smart game management. The first half, I think everybody who watched that first half knows that Arsenal were really at it. Yeah. They pressed Liverpool really, really well. Mm-hmm. They dominated because of that. Liverpool, and I know Jurgen Klopp was frustrated at the end about how they didn't play football. Yeah. Well, they weren't allowed to play football. Mm-hmm. That's all down to Arsenal's pressing. Now, jumping forward to half-time, you concede that goal, kind of a mess-up, mix-up defensively with the own goal. And second half was different. Liverpool started much more on the front foot. And what I liked about Arsenal, Rob, is there were periods there that they were like, they were kind of okay with that. I was watching with my son, as I often do at a weekend, and the shape of Arsenal was really good. And they basically said, you know what, you're having a bit of a reaction after halftime.
Yeah.
Your tail's up a little bit. This is okay. And we've got this. And we defended really well. The shape defensively for Arsenal was not different. When they, again, like, without the ball, they're pretty much four at the back, four across midfield, two up front, the defend. It's Havertz and Odegaard today. They're a bit different in possession because Rice played alongside Jorginho with Odegaard kind of central as a number 10. That's kind of different. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. But second half, Rob, they got their opportunities. The long ball over the top, the mistake from the goalkeeper and from Van Dijk. They go 2-1 up and they managed the game really well. Didn't feel like they had to continue with the pressing or continue with the good football. They were okay saying, you know what? And that, I just think that was smart.
Yeah.
And I like to see teams that can do both things. They can high press, they can play the football. Mm. And other times when they realise the time is right, they can sit behind the ball and say, oh, okay, they're having a bit of a go here. Let's just sit in there and get a good shape because something good can happen on the counter-attack. It's exactly what happened. I thought it was a really nice job of the manager picking a team, changing the tactics. And like you said, Rob, having the patience and the mentality to play a little bit differently in the second half, but knowing that that was the best way to manage the game. If they'd have opened up, right, Arsenal, I'm sure of this, and Arsenal a few years ago, if they get on the front foot and they get those fullbacks flying or inside and they try and expand and play their best football, Liverpool would be like rubbing their hands and like they'll pounce, they'll counterattack. They didn't do that. They didn't fall into the trap of that. And I thought it was really well managed from Arteta and the team.
Yeah, it was interesting because we got Arteta at the bench. He was pitch side with the guys over in England. Did a brilliant job today, the guys pitch side. And they got Mikel Arteta. Yeah. And obviously, he's in a good mood. And Lee Dixon's obviously a former Arsenal player, so he's got huge respect that he carries there. But he was very open, Arteta, and talked about how he spoke to his players about, OK, We've had a disappointment and they're going to come have a little go at us. We have to expect them to come.
Oh,
we've got to be prepared to be ready for that. Mm. We've got to be prepared to take what they do and then go again. And it almost played out to exactly. So I thought for 15 minutes, Liverpool looked lightly. You'd expect Klopp got into him. We knew probably changes would come. Yep. Nunes would get on. Didn't know how long that would be.
Yep.
But I thought there was a real control about Arsenal, which I think is a step further from where they were last year. Last year, Arsenal would have come flying out second half to prove a point. Right, we've just conceded, we're going to get 2-1 up. And they'd have opened up and Liverpool would have probably won 3-1. But there's a different maturity. Mm. And I have to go to my underappreciated player of the week because I can't talk about the Arsenal performance without talking about Jorginho today, Rob. And I was a little surprised that he ended up winning the player of the match from, I think, our partner Sky in England. And I said to Rebecca, before any of that, I said, I'm going to name a player. Probably most people won't mention him. He's not going to be a headline maker. He won't be man of the match. But Jorginho, Rob, we have a tactical cam in the studio, which is a great view. I mean, a full 360-degree view of the whole game, and you can see the shape and the people. Jorginho's... I think Jorginho's game management, to your point, what he did with the ball, what he did without the ball, what he was urging people, what he was not, he was an absolute... Honestly, I kept writing notes down, Jorginho this, Jorginho that. When they were pressing, he was the one who was setting the triggers and telling people to go. When they were sitting off, he was talking to people, getting Saka in and Martinelli on that side to do their jobs. I just thought he's one of those players, Rob, who has come into to Arsenal, doesn't play every week. Mikel Arteta said, trains like a beast every day. He's been a winner internationally and at club level. He's obviously a huge influence on the team. Declan Rice talked about learning from him and him being a mentor to him. I just think Jorginho's one of those players who fans possibly don't understand his value on a match day and during the week. I think Mikel Arteta does, and I thought it was a day to recognise the roles that those people play on big days like today.
Yeah, it's a great shout, Rob, and I'm with you. If you ask Arsenal fans, I'm just going to jump in there, but I'll let you finish there, about, you know, some Arsenal fans are not sure about him or whatever. What it is with Jorginho, and I think I tweeted out something like, his downside is if he's left on his own in the middle of that midfield and there's a counter-attack situation going on and he is not very quick and he's not very physical. Now, you put him in a team that's compact and you put him next to Declan Rice, all of a sudden, I'm liking that midfield double pivot, is what they say now. The two central holding midfield players that are side by side. It meant Odegaard is a little freer, a little bit more advanced to receive the ball. They've still got Saka right, still got Martinelli, and Kai Havertz as well, by the way, Rob. And again, we don't want to get too tactical in this. He came into midfield. On their left as you look forward, and Odegaard sort of pulled to the right. So I think you indicated this little box thing they had, and that was a deeper box. That wasn't a high up one behind another. And so just, I mean, it's a little tweak that I just think you make those little changes and we notice it. Well, that's different.
Yeah.
And Liverpool, if Jurgen Klopp, like, oh, hang on a minute. I thought Odegaard was right and we expected Rice to play the left eight. No. Yeah. Yeah. I love those two together. You get good football, good defence. Rice can still get forward, Rob. But me and you both played in the middle of midfield with two players, and one can get in the box when it's on. So Rice can still do that. So I really liked it from the tactical side of it with the two holding players. I feel like Arsenal and Arteta needed to do something different. It had gone a little bit predictable. A little bit predictable the way that their football hadn't changed over the last couple of years. And this doesn't seem much, and it's not much, but it's just something a little different. And I thought that was really good. And he absolutely had a good game, Rob. The only thing he can't do is defend very well. But if they're compact and he's got Declan Rice next to him, then that mitigates that. It worked out great. And you're right, because the camera, of course, I know it in there. You can see him controlling and pushing. Because sometimes when the shot is the main camera,
the action,
you don't always see that.
Action,
so that's really interesting that he's a leader. He's an Italian, mate. I mean, I played with some Italian players, and I've never... They're so professional and dedicated, and it doesn't surprise me that he's that sort of leader, the way that he organises on the field.
Yeah. Just before we have a quick word on Liverpool, because it wasn't a great day for them, and Jurgen Klopp was big enough to say that, you know, we didn't do it. Just from Arsenal's point of view, you know, the Havertz situation, whether it was for Jesus, we were here sustaining an injury, wasn't fit. I think it was a knee that they talked about. But obviously not fit, not in the match day squad. So Havertz comes in, the choice, as you say, Trossard and Ketier are the options. How does that feel moving forward, Rob, when Jesus is fit?
Well, it's a great question. It's a great question, Rob. And if I'm sort of being totally honest, I still think this is what's going to hinder them winning the title. I just do. I just think that... I don't think Kai Havertz is the guy to win a title from a number nine or a false nine. I don't know whether Gabriel Jesus has... Though we talked on the last pod, Rob, about I read that he's changing his mentality about more goals from now on. We'll see when he comes back in there. Trossard, I suppose, is a real proper false nine. Maybe doesn't get the goals as well. So even though it's been so positive about Arsenal, you look at that team, right? You look at those options in midfield, and you look at the wide players. You know the options there. They are one. Blimmin, really good striker away from what I think is a champion team. I just think that one position, and I know that others can score and can fill the void a little bit, but I still don't think those, the other players that have done well can get the number of goals. I think there's going to be games, Rob, where Arsenal are not going to win games because they can't, because they push and push and push and can't find a way through. Push and push. I mean, they haven't got that extra couple of goals, few goals from, in the team that might mean, and I'm talking about title here. Yeah. I'm talking about this is, you know, to win it all at the very top, which is going to be very difficult. So, I mean, going forward, let's see some more Gabriel Jesus, but just see if there's anything in this mentality he's talked about. I'm going to be much more focused on scoring goals, because if he does that and it works out, I mean, I'm sure it's not as simple as that, but that's interesting. Other than that, what are you thinking then, Rob? Are you thinking that you'd rather have somebody other than Jesus for the rest of the season in the nine position?
Do you know what, Rob? I think sometimes let things play out, and if it doesn't, if it continues to look as... I mean, when Manchester City went false nine with De Bruyne up there at one time and Foden and that, we all weren't sure then, oh, can you win a title without striking?
Yeah.
Maybe, you know. I'll tell you what else, Rob, I want to move to Liverpool just quickly to get your view on them. What I would say is with this team, it was good to see Martinelli back to something like form. I thought he was dangerous today, and that's a help. That's a bonus if you're not getting goals centrally, but those two guys on the outside start, you know, getting the goals again. That was good news for
Arsenal.
It's
critical for them.
Let's quickly move to Liverpool. And just before we do, mate, I think it's right to pay our due to Conor Bradley, the young man, the fullback who lost his father a couple of days ago. I mean, terrible news, and obviously not part of the match day squad. You know, after a brilliant week he'd had with his goals and his assist and his kind of announcement to Liverpool, you know, our thoughts with him and his family, you know, football pales into significance on something like that.
No, it's well said, mate. And, yeah, I mean, such a young man to... I mean, I'm just hoping that he saw... You know, his son lived the dream and scored the goal and have the impact on Liverpool, you know, football club as what he has. So, it's shocking to hear that. And so often triumph is followed by tragedy. Yeah. And it's another situation like that. So, you know, I'm sure I'll bounce back. I'm sure the club and the manager, you know, are tremendously supportive. We know that at this football club. So he'll be back. But yeah, out of the side, Trent Alexander-Arnold come in. At right fullback for this game. Joe Gomez would prefer to left back. And it was a funny... You know what, Rob? You know sometimes when we all say, and it's a cliche in football, you know, the first 5 or 10 minutes, you can kind of see how they are and how they're set. And Arsenal started very quickly. Liverpool started very sloppily. I thought there was Van Dijk. There was like a Trent. Remember the time Trent gave the ball, flicked the ball away. There was a sloppiness about Liverpool early on that was not the sort of the body language you want. Arsenal jumped all over them, and they couldn't get out. They couldn't play out. They tried it. They tried. They couldn't get the front players involved. They couldn't get the midfield involved at all. That is really restricting Liverpool when you press them high. And they haven't got the option over the top of Darwin Nunez early on, Rob. So it was an off day for Liverpool. We'll get into some details. But it was an off day. Of course, they missed their best player. I guess Jesus was out for Arsenal. Mo Salah's still not there. Dominic Szoboszlai, I think, suffered a hamstring injury, there.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they both can argue that there's players that were missing. But Liverpool, we don't often say that about Liverpool, Rob, in a big game, that they didn't really show up as you'd expect them to. And I think the team and the manager afterwards are pretty magnanimous in saying that was a deserved Arsenal victory. They didn't play well. They didn't handle the press well. And they made mistakes, big mistakes at the back.
Yeah, but in fairness to Van Dijk, he came forward as captain and held his hand up and said he should have dealt with situations better. And, you know, after that first start and the second
Rob, can we just talk about that, Rob? Can we just go into that a little bit? Because... Yeah. It's obviously 1-1. You showed it on the broadcast. Yeah. It was a defining moment of the game, and it was a simple ball over the top, which he got himself in a good position.
He was shielding
the ball, and he saw Alisson charging off his line towards him. Mm. Now I got the sense that you and Tim and a few others and himself, to be fair, he could have cleared it, but I think in the moment there, he looks up, goalkeeper's rushing out, he's real close to him, he tries to sort of get out of the way and let the goalkeeper deal with it, and Alisson messed it up, he missed the ball. So I thought, in my opinion, the goalkeeper was more at fault for that goal than Virgil van Dijk. That's just me.
I tended to agree. Although, what do you think? Tim, I tend to agree, but I'm sitting next to Tim who's saying that's one where the goalkeeper should take charge. And if he comes, Tim said he's got to clear everything out.
Take it.
Yeah, take everything out. And he said, if you take Van Dijk, if you take the thing, he said, if you take your grandmother, she's there, take everything out and everything goes. But I'm the same as you. And if I put myself in that situation, one of my coaches always said to me, the closer you get to the goalkeeper, the more chance of error, kick the ball out. And maybe that's what he should have done.
But let me say something else, last bit on this, Rob.
Yeah.
It was also, in my opinion, a bad judgment from Alisson to fly off his line.
Yeah.
If he stays 10 yards away from his goal, Virgil van Dijk is goal side. Yeah. He's in control. Mm. He could lay it back to the goalkeeper. Yeah. He could dribble it out and play the ball out. But because he committed to that ball over the top, it became a panic situation. So for me, it was an Alisson error. And listen, he's a brilliant goalkeeper. He's been magnificent. But that was more of an Alisson error. And then from there, Liverpool, as we said earlier, Rob, they drove at the game.
Yeah.
Didn't really create too much. And Arsenal were like okay with soaking it up. And of course, Trossard scores on the counter attack. It just was a poor day for Liverpool, Rob, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Not a great day for Liverpool. Brilliant day for Arsenal. 3 goals, 3 points, and still very much part of the title race.
When you buy a new house, you might say,
shut the front door.
Winning.
No, seriously, shut the front door. We own this house now.
But you actually need to say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. The local State Farm agent is there to help you choose the coverage you need.
Welcome to my crib. No one says that anymore, but I don't care.
So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Okay, my friend, let's move it to South London from North London. We'll go to Stamford Bridge. We'll go to Chelsea. We'll go to 4 goals conceded in 2 back-to-back games now. 4-1 against Liverpool, you kind of go, oh, that's not a very good result, but it's Liverpool. 4-2 defeat to Wolves, in absolutely no disrespect to Gary O'Neill, who we've talked to, I mean, he's doing a wonderful job. Oh. But 4-2 defeat at home to Wolves at this stage of the season, after we've talked about our friend Mr. Pochettino and time and development and progress. And it's starting to get a bit serious, Rob, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is just, it's a shocker, isn't it? It's a shocker. I mean, the Wolves go above them in the league table as well.
Yeah.
You look at the team and it's like, well, this looks, you know, you've got your Sterling, you've got your midfield, you know, your expensive midfield players in Moses Caicedo and Enzo Fernandez, in Cuckoo. So I watched, just for disclosure.
I
watched the Man United game. Same game. Okay. So I watched the Man United. Yeah, so I can give you more detail on that. Mm. But of course, I saw bits of it. I saw the highlights. Yeah. I saw the team. I know at Stamford Bridge. I know against Wolverhampton Wanderers that are trying to keep a team, you know, from what they had pre-season. Yeah. It's incredible. And we talked about it on the midweek pod where, like, how long before we start to say, well, hang on a minute, Pochettino.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Surely this squad's better. I mean, Graham Potter's was different last year. The squad changes so much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's making Potter look better every flipping week, given that you think that they're trimming the squad.
Becky Lowe said exactly why Potter's out and about now. He doesn't look cut off as bad, does he? Apparently, Rob, they're in a worse position now than they were under Potter.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. They've got less points or something, conceded more goals or something. It's an astonishing. I mean, I'm not going to flip and say too much about this, Rob, but can you remember one of the early podcasts, like the second week or the third week, I remember saying on this show that this is going to be a long, tough season for Chelsea. Yeah. Because given the team I'd seen for 2 or 3 weeks and look at the new players, I'm thinking they look very good. They just don't look very good. And I think that is true. Plus, they're still better than what they're doing right now. There seems to be no fight robbing them.
No.
And am I being, if there's one thing you could say about Pochettino that maybe, I don't know, that he isn't on the same level as some of the other ones, would it be kind of fight and determination and pressing and aggression and and you know, I know he does it his own way, and that's often the football side of things, which he's trying to do at Chelsea. But should we expect more aggression from his team, more fight from his team that you might expect from a Chelsea team that I always regard as being physical? Blimey, some of the Chelsea sides in the past. Now, you know, should there? I'm pointing more at Pochettino now, Robin. Should he be coaching and encouraging his team to be more aggressive in the game? Because that was way too easy to lose like that at home to Wolves.
Yeah, Poch wants to do it a certain way, and he was assigned to the, you know, and I hate the word, but the project to, you know, develop this young talent and build a team. But
we're now
22, 23 games in. We are in a situation where I'm not sure he knows any more than from the first day of the season what his best 11 looks like. No one unit in the team. The defence, if you had to pick a best back four, I'm not sure you'd know. Chilwell's nowhere near the player he was when he started the season. I know he's had an injury. Doesn't look as committed. Dezazi looks a disaster. Never mind Dezazi. Midfield two of Enzo and Caicedo, Rob, have got lots of potential, lots of ability. They don't understand the responsibility, the role in midfield, what sometimes you have to do and hook things on and get things away and be solid. It's a front line that, apart from Cole Palmer, I'm not sure who your best wide players are. You've got a centre forward who don't necessarily score that many goals. It does start to look bad on him. I think he'll get the season. As I talked about in the last pod, I think he'll start next season, but I think he'll have to hit the ground running. I think he has to change his outlook, Rob. I think he has to start being a little bit tougher and a bit more ruthless and saying, you know what, you play in my team. If you don't do well, come and sit out. You're out. You're out for the next month or and go and find out, Rob. And if he has to go to Todd Bowley at the end of the season and go, you know, these 10 players here, they're not good enough for what we want. They're not good enough for Chelsea where we want to go. You have to sort that out. I think that's where we're getting to with this now. Because if he doesn't do that, Rob, I'm a little bit worried for him because I think it starts to turn on him.
100%, Rob. I was about to go the same place. He's got to turn nasty. He's got to turn more aggressive. He's got to start throwing teacups around and get a little bit old school. Because these young players that have had accolades, big transfer moves, big wages, and big moves to Chelsea Football Club, and like it's almost like they haven't grown up yet. And I don't know. I mean, Moises Caicedo should know it. And I saw his anger afterwards. In some ways, it's good to see that. Yeah, it's good to see that, like, proper emotion, proper anger. Yeah, he really, really was upset when he came off. And I think the club needs that. I think you're right, Rob. Whether it's street, you know, like, I don't know. Listen, we've all had different managers, Rob, and I understand that different managers have different styles, different ways. But I think at some point, I don't care what your mannerisms are, you've got to scare the players a little bit, like frighten the players into performing. There's got to be a bit of fear factor. And all the greatest managers, when you think about it, they've got a real that Klopp's got a nasty streak. You know that Pep's got a nasty streak. Sir Alex Ferguson's a legendary hairdryer in your face, flipping, hammering players. Kenny Dalglish, Liverpool, I remember. There's a nasty streak in all these guys. And maybe he's got it, Poch. But I tell you what, whichever way it is, this, and I know that I don't. That in some ways, I've criticised the some of the recruitment, whether the right quality to. But this is unacceptable. 11th place in the league table right now. I mean, minus one goal difference. Yeah. They conceded more than they've scored all season long. It's astonishing the underperformance of this football club from the recruitment. And by the way, I understand. And we know that Todd Bowley, initially at this football club, had to do a lot of things on his own. Yeah. He had to try and pick the players. And with him and Thomas Tuchel, they threw some players in there. But now there's CEO, there's two directors of football. They've got the coach that they want. Like, and if you're him, or if you're the ownership, Clear Lake Capital, it's like, well, okay, guys. Like, okay, what's going on? Yeah. You know, I'm out of it now. Yeah. You've had my money. You're the pros. I've hired all the pros. Yeah. What's going on? So that, I would think, will be coming from the owner as well, because we can talk about project, we can talk about time, you can talk about your 2 years, Rob. I can talk about some of the players aren't good enough. This is embarrassing. This is embarrassing for Chelsea Football Club to be in the bottom half of the table below, you know, your Wolverhampton Wanderers that we thought were going to get relegated. So, yeah, I mean, it's starting to be alarm bells now, and there's got to be some reaction from the club, from the manager and the players in the next game.
Absolutely. It was one of those days I said to on air to Bex, right now, I'd rather have the group of Wolves players behind me, but I know what I'm going to get, than the group of Chelsea players. And you think how much has been spent and how much wages. Yep. Let's not forget, by the way, Wolves haven't got Hee Chan Wang, who's their best striker, who's been away for so much time. So it's incredible. Yeah. Just before we move on this, mate, and I have to go there with you, because you know Lady Low and her provocative ways. There's a certain Portuguese young gentleman who's now available, not working in Italian football.
Don't even think about it.
Just let me go finish the statement. And she suggested, do you think, if things don't go well between now and maybe the end of the season, would Mr. Bowley at all be interested in a conversation with a certain Portuguese gentleman who would come in, Rob, who would get some fear? Now, I said the fit with the young players just doesn't work. I don't think it's the kind of thing that he would do right now. But it's an interesting angle, Robbie Musto.
Well, it is an angle, and I have heard a little bit of fans talk about it. I'm with you, Rob, with the young players thing. I mean, this is such this is so not a Jose squad and a philosophy of bringing it. I mean, it's just so not. Apart from the fact the jobs that he's done recently have not ended well, the Spurs situation, you know, the anger, the bitterness about him continues to grow. And you're going backwards. No. Not in my opinion, Rob. I mean, we all know that he'll shake it up. It upsets everybody. Everybody starts fighting. There's horrible play. It should end right now. If they end up doing that, I kind of give up.
I'll take that as a definite no. And move on to Goodison Park, Goodison Park. Okay. Pretty good game, actually. I mean, a game weekend, mate, full of goals this weekend. I don't know what quite was in the water. It ended up Everton 2, Tottenham 2. Richarlison in really good form. A couple of really nice one-touch finishes for Tottenham. And the non-celebrations against the Everton team was good to see. He's obviously got a lot of respect for Everton. From Everton's point of view, get a goal back through Jack Harrison. Again, goalkeepers, Rob Vicario in that situation. Yeah. You know, we'll maybe talk about that. And then Jared Branthwaite. No, he was an absolute little diamond, or big diamond, should say, for Everton. Came late, got a header. It was a really important point, I thought, for Everton in a tough game against a Spurs team that getting bodies back and starting to look a little bit like that team we saw early in the season. So, good point for Everton. Big disappointment, I thought, for Spurs, because a chance for them to, you know, cement a place in the top four. Where are we with the Everton kind of push against relegation? And where are we with Andrew? Yeah. Because it was interesting. Two set pieces Spurs conceded. And is there a sense of, for all the great football, at some point, you've got to defend better? I mean, we're looking today about the goals against. It is, you know, quite more than anybody else up there in the top six. For a team who want to win things and outside chance it before this, people are talking about titles. Does something have to change a little? Does it have to be a little tweak?
Well, let me start with Everton, Rob. I loved the Everton performance. You know more than anybody else, Rob, that I love the beautiful game, right? I'm a bit of a purist, you know. Maybe because the way I was a player, you know, I wasn't that type of guy. So when I see that sort of football, I love it. And I, of course, I study the game and I love the tactical side of things. So I love the silky side of football. But I'll tell you what, I like watching Everton. Everton's effort, the energy, the never giving up, the pushing right to the end, the physicality around the goalkeeper, Branthwaite stepping up there, the fan support, the protest before the game. I love the feisty nature of Everton. I love their performance. All my notes are things like determination, passion, you know, amazing drive, totally deserve the point, never look like giving up.
Send that note to Chelsea, by the way. Can you send that note to Stamford Bridge?
Well, that's 1,000,000%. That's the steal that they need, a little bit of that. So I like watching Everton. I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin looks like he's struggling for confidence, which is not great.
Yeah.
I think they missed Onana in midfield. They missed Decore as well. Mm-hmm. Amadou Decore. They miss those two powerhouses in the midfield, and still they go keep going, and still they go forward. They made it a really difficult game for Tottenham, Rob. Yeah. And there aren't many teams that do that, because Spurs football is often so good, so slick. But they never, I never really, my Tottenham notes are not, my Tottenham notes are things like Mickey van der Ven, and I think it was John Champion who called him the Flying Dutchman.
Yeah.
His speed, again, as we're jumping off, is my jaw open when I watch him make recovery runs. He has the ability to play offside, right? And if the play goes on, he can sprint back anyway. Yeah. So I love watching him. You know, I looked at it late on, Rob, and I see that, what's his name? I got his, Radu Dragosin, the new centre-back they brought in, the Romanian, I think. Yeah. Dragosin came on. I'm like, that kind of makes sense. You know, the last 5 or 10 minutes from Ange, shore it up, five across the back, and they still conceded that late set-piece goal with Branthwaite. So they're still a work in progress, and I think he would say that.
Yeah.
I think Maddison and Van de Ven coming back is big. Mm. I think Everton away is just a difficult game, Rob. Everton away is a difficult game. And Richarlison, the other thing really that I made note of is finishes and how he looks different.
Confidence,
I mean, he's the finish on his first one, just a little bit of class, a little bit of composure. He looks a different player, and he's one of those that you can see what his confidence is like by watching him run around a little bit. And his head, often his head goes down when he gives a book. But he looks good. So Heung-min Son to come back. The players get him fit again. Bissouma, I think, has always missed in the middle of the park.
Yeah.
Even though I kind of like what Bentancourt does. Højbjerg does his thing. I prefer, I know I'm a fan of Brennan Johnson, but I still prefer Kulusevski, I think, on that wide position. So they're in a good spot at Spurs. Well, they're a couple of points behind Aston Villa. Mm. But it was more about Everton for me, Rob. And the 10 points, they're going to wait to hear back from that. Then they've got to wait to hear if they're going to get another deduction on the... So I enjoyed Everton's fight. And my last Premier League minutes were at Everton. And not a bad place to bow out at Everton because of what it is as a stadium. The fans are like 5 yards away from you. And they're an aggressive bunch. They're a lively bunch. And the team play with that. The manager's perfect for them right now. I know they're in the...
They're still in the bottom three. 19 points. But it was interesting, Rob, because similar to you and I sort of said to Bex, this is a game about structure and organisation against fluidity and spontaneous and rotations. And it was interesting because I said, in a strange way, Bex, it's harder to do what Dyche does with his set of players than Ange. Ange, listen, you got possession. I think it's pleasing. I know he's looking for rotations, but I want to play. Everybody wants to play like Ange with freedom and you know, expressing yourself. I think for Dyche, you have to keep working in a certain way. You know, players have to be in certain positions. We have to be well set up, and then we break, and then we. And I just think it's a really hard job that he does. That he gets the tune out of his players every week. And listen, some days it doesn't quite work. And if they hadn't got the 10 points, we wouldn't be talking in the same way. But I just think, like you, he deserves a little bit of credit for what they're doing and the way they are. They're so short of confidence in the attack. Beto comes on and looks a bit clumsy. I know people thought it was a penalty. I wasn't so sure about that one. Calvert-Lewin thinks he's scored and ends up coming off Harrison, so he doesn't get his goal. I think that's 17 games now, Rob, in all competitions. He's not scored. Okay. And as you say, I think that starts to get in his head. So they're going to have to work with him. Mm. They're going to have to give him the confidence. So, I thought it was a hard-earned point, but a well-earned point for Everton.
Yeah,
just from Spurs' point of view, Rob, and Richarlison in the goals, and now he's confident, and I think it was his 9th Premier League goal of the season. Sonny comes back, my friend. Sonny comes back. Where does Sonny go, and where does Richarlison go in that situation? I mean, have we got to be careful that we don't automatically take attention away from Richie again and we go back to the frustrated not scoring, or how can we dovetail that we get the best from both of them? Can Sonny still come from one of those wider positions that he did like under Kane and still be as dangerous?
I think so. I think he comes straight in on the left-hand side, Rob. I said this a while back, if Richarlison can be a central player that can score a regular goals, which he's absolutely doing right now, that's huge for Tottenham. Because then you put another goal scorer on the left-hand side, you've got a creative player now fit again in James Maddison, and for me, you play Kulusevski on the left side. So a 4-2-3-1 with Heung-min Son on the left, Maddison, Kulusevski, Richarlison.
Right.
I think that's what the fans... Kula's on the right.
Yeah.
Richarlison up front, a confident Richarlison that will link now with Heung-min Son. You've got James Maddison to roll balls. Where Richarlison's good is he gets on the half turn, so his shoulders facing the goal. You can see the goal, but he also sees the pass. Mm. And Maddison's brilliant at those. You've got the runs from outside of Heung-min Son. You've got the creativity and the little link up play of Kulusevski. I just think that's exciting for Spurs fans, and I as a fan of the game, I want to see it.
Yeah.
I want to see it. So I don't think that's a hard question, Rob. I know Werner's done okay. Got a couple of assists, didn't he, during the week?
Yeah.
A couple of crosses that led to goals. Assists, fair play to Werner. Mm. And it's a good little, I don't know, he's a good player to have in the club until the end of the season. If Richarlison goes quiet, Son might go up front, Werner comes left, or Werner goes up front. It's a good acquisition. But Son back on the left, Richarlison up front, that with Maddison prompting, I still think Van de Ven fit now, Romero's fit now, you've got a Dragosin as another central defender, Porro's excellent, Udogi had a weird game. So I think that Tottenham's best, and I want to see it now, between now and the end of the season,
when Heung-min
Son comes back, they can kick on, and they can overcome Villa for me, Aston Villa in that top four.
Top four
it's going to be an amazing race, but I want to see the best.
It's going to be a race for that one, top four.
When you buy a new house, you might say,
shut the front door.
Winning.
No, seriously, shut the front door. We own this house now.
But you actually need to say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. The local State Farm agent is there to help you choose the coverage you need.
Welcome to my crib. No one says that anymore, but I don't care.
So just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
OK, my friend, we're going to move to Old Trafford, and you're going to tell me how the youngsters of Manchester United are dragging them back into some contention. You're going to tell me about possible European place. Have they still got a chance for top four? And you're going to tell me about an injury to Lisandro Martinez that didn't look great, and reports saw that it could be something a little bit more long-term than they first thought.
Yeah, well, I'll start with that, Rob. And it's one of them where his leg kind of got stuck a little bit, and the weight of a player kind of buckled it a little bit in his knee. Again, we don't know how bad it is. He tried to continue, I believe, and then he went off sub.
Ten Hag said he's not such great.
Is he? He's such an important player, Rob. I mean, I know there was the whole thing about his height and everything else, but he's. If you notice that he's come back in the centre back, and not only are they defending better, but there's a spirit about it. They're all high fiving and they're fist pumping each other, and he has that energy. Yeah. He's a good defender. And Maguire got a start today. I mean, Maguire made a couple of mistakes again, and the goalkeeper helped him out, and so that is a real blow. Casemiro back in the midfield. He's holding in midfield. It's not too alongside. He plays on his own. To his left is Bruno. Mm-hmm. To his right is. Is Mainoo. There was a shot, Rob. You know, I think you know who the goal scorers are. The Garnacho got a couple of goals, and Rasmus Højlund scored a goal. And there was one shot. I think it was Mainoo, Garnacho, and Rasmus Højlund sat together.
Sitting on the
advertising thing. Yeah. The shot was from behind. Their arms. Mm. You got to think that's a bright future for Manchester United. Mm. I think that. They going forward, Rob, to summarise the game a little bit, they look really dangerous. Really dangerous. In possession, playing their football now a lot better. But obviously in the counter-attack as well. They're so quick on the counter-attack. So much talent. Højlund takes his goal really well.
Yeah, right.
Lovely, classy little fake inside. Right foot into the corner. And Garnacho is going to be a star player. All right, I think he's going to be a star player. He's going to be better than Rashford ever is or ever would be. He's going to be certainly better than Antony. He's going to be right up there. And I'm chucking that in right now. I think he's a special talent that's getting better with more games, with more first team, with more maturity. I think he's going to be a very, very good player for them. And the striker looks like he's getting comfortable.
Yeah.
And the goals are coming. It looks like scoring all the time now. They weren't coming in the Premier League. They were coming in the Champions League. He had really good finishes. So he knew he could do it. The problem is defensively for Manchester United. And, you know, there's work to be done there. It's like, what was I thinking of? It's like they and Maguire played, so this may be a big part of it. I know that our Danny Higginbotham talks about if it's not quick defenders, they drop off.
Yeah.
And United want to go forward, and there's big spaces between them, and I agree with him. If Manchester United, Rob, were more aggressive in a higher line, right, and we've seen that with Liverpool, we see it with Spurs, see it with Aston Villa, what that does, it keeps the game in their opponent's half, it keeps them pinned in, and they don't get played through as much. They can get played through Man United because of the spaces between the defensive line, the midfield line, and the front players. It gets a little bit too big.
Yeah.
Higher line, push them in, and you're a little bit vulnerable over the top, and that's the problem, and that's what Maguire got caught with the ball over the top, and that's why he makes them a little bit deeper. So, quicker defenders in the recruitment window, higher line, because the attacking stuff is looking better. I'm not going to say it's brilliant, because the data, in fact, right now, still isn't amazing. They've still got one minus one goal difference, but those the Mainoo silky player, Garnacho's improving by the week, and so is Rasmus Højlund. Rashford looks happier and brighter and had a few moments, but it's a good-looking front four when you chuck in there Bruno Fernandes and Kobbie Mainoo with his prompting in midfield. So, reasons to be optimistic. It was a good, solid 90 minutes that we don't often get from Manchester United against a team, by the way, in West Ham that can be... They can frustrate you. They can park the bus, they can play deep, and they can frustrate you. But this is a classy day for Manchester United, where we've jumped on them when they've been awful or inconsistent.
Sure.
And maybe I'm you know, so I'm not saying, Rob, I'm not saying things like, well, you know, Højlund did something amazing. They played pretty crappy, but somebody did something special. This isn't one of those.
Yeah.
This was, they look really good. Mm. They look really good in the attacking phase. Keep hold of that, please, and be stronger. They conceded, I mean, this is a clean sheet, but they've conceded a lot of goals before that.
Mm.
That continues to be the... I mean, there's a clean sheet in this game, but there was chances. That's where they can get better. But this was pretty encouraging, Rob.
Yeah, sixth in the table, mate. You know, if they could have a great run and maybe have a look at one of them Champions League or certainly European footballs, that's got to be the aim for Ten Hag. Not a great day for David Moyes returning back to Old Trafford. Didn't obviously see much of this game, just some highlights and things, but... Didn't have too many looks at it. I didn't see West Ham, and Onana made a decent save early from a deflected effort and one or two efforts second half, but didn't look as though it was quite their day for West Ham.
Not as defensively strong as you might expect. Calvin Phillips, again, made a big error. But he came on and made a big, big error, getting caught on the ball.
Yeah.
You know, he's in that position. And it's so interesting because people don't realise how hard it is in general in the Premier League, and particularly in midfield, and particularly going back to the back four to link things together. Mm. You have got no safety net. If you're not quite sharp, you make the bad decision, your touch isn't perfect, then the opponents will take the ball off you. Happened again. Mm. Happened again. It looks like down in the dumps. And David Moyes must be, he's got to do a job
on
it.
Isn't it? Because he hasn't played much football.
How cuddly
he
is.
Can train as much as you want.
I know.
We know training. You match game. You know, you need to play games, and you need match fitness, and you know that's something obviously he's going to have to get, but you know, hopefully he can, for him and for England,
absolutely,
and get his career back on track and get up to speed. All right, mate, we're going to talk about just finish off with a few other results from the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm going to start Bramall Lane on this one. Sheffield United, Chris Wilder, my friend, I think had a go at the referees before the game, and we talked about siege mentality, and he's an old head who knows what he's doing. He's looking to poke the dressing room and get them going. Didn't work, really. Got beat 5-0, by the way. Surrendered at 5-0. McGinn with the first goal after Watkins hits the post. Watkins gets the second. Bailey gets the third in 20 minutes of 3-0 down. Tielemans smashes a fourth just before half-time. Half of Bramall Lane empties out. Sheffield United fans had seen enough. Mm. Into the second half, think, maybe there might be a comeback. Moreno smashes one in 2 minutes into the second half, 5-0. And then, to be fair, Villa, done, job done, mate. Put their feet up. Sheffield United had a goal disallowed for a very minor offside. They'd worked a set piece routine. I think it was Souza who ended up scoring, but that didn't count. It was one of those days. And Sheffield United, mate, and I said, are already having to think about what happens in the Championship next year, because dead and buried, not enough fight. Defensively, all over the place. He played a back three, Rob, which is his go-to. It was a back three that looked so porous. He played Oslo up top, who's a young lad who's come through academy, maybe a lot of talent. He has Archer on the bench who can score goals. He had Homer on the bench. Things I just couldn't quite understand. They're in a bit of trouble, and he needs to start thinking about next season now and how they might be looking to get out of the Championship.
Yeah, there was an emotional pull for Chris Wilder. And I think, to be fair, there was an improvement in the performance level for Sheffield United.
Yeah, maybe.
They weren't winning games, but they were losing by fewer, and they were more team together. And I remember the words that he said to his board of directors, don't give up on us, give us some money, because I wouldn't say that if I didn't think we had a real chance of staying up. Well, that's gone now.
Yeah.
That's gone now. Just not enough quality.
No.
I mean, fight. I mean, I think a Chris Wilder team generally has fight. I think a Sheffield United fans generally demand fight.
Yeah.
Sheffield United aren't a good enough team not to be able to fight. So I think there is kind of some physicality in them, Rob. But if it's, quality-wise, positional-wise...
I've got to be honest, I didn't see it.
No.
I'll tell you
what I saw as well, Rob, on social media, was... So Chris Wilder, again, I'm not 100% sure my facts here. I'm going by a social media report. I think it was a journalist that reported this. Did you see it, Rob, where he was talking to a reporter on TV and saying something like, I went to see the referee afterwards. I guess to ask him about something. And the referee's assistant was eating his sandwich.
Yeah, that was ahead of the game, mate. It was ahead of the game.
Was it?
And he was
talking,
it was ahead of the game. And that's what I was saying. I think he did it as a, like, us against the world siege mentality. They were talking like, we're the team who are going to get relegated.
Disrespectful if I'm the Premier League manager in the room.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
What a strange thing to say.
I'm not sure what. Again, I think it's a siege mentality. I think it's a leaf out of the Jose Mourinho playbook. You know, the us against the world, everybody hates us, we're not getting results. Come on, lads, let's go and show them. Well, that's what I say. Didn't work. They lost 5-0. And Chris.
I thought it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, so that was before the game. So he basically said, a lack of respect there. He's in the same room as a Premier League manager.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he came
big ego.
Came
like
out,
that.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to be Premier League manager much longer. No, I don't think Premier League manager much longer. So, I just saw the interview. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Let's move to St James's Park, because I know, 4-4, Luton, 8 goals in 2 games, 4 against Brighton, 4 against Newcastle. Incredible. Rob Edwards continues to be in the running for manager of the year if he keeps this Luton Town team up.
Yeah.
Played football, scored goals, despite drawing 4-4 and being 4-2 up, I think you take confidence from what's happened. Anything more on Newcastle and Luton, mate, you want to take?
Yeah, I mean, it's astonishing, the fight. We talked about it on the last pod, Rob, about... I just couldn't believe the scoreline. I think I was watching another game. I think it was this crazy window, and I'm like, I've got to switch over. What is going on at St James's Park? I switched over, and I saw a Luton team getting more chances, score another goal, I think it was. I mean, it's remarkable what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple football. It's not complicated. They're not trying to be a modern team and play through the lines. They get it forward. They get it wide. They swing balls into the centre. They're good at set pieces. They've got some physicality. And it's astonishing, absolutely astonishing what they're doing at the moment. And I think, when I look at a player in midfield, Rob, and I'm going to jump to my underappreciated performer.
Yeah.
And I think this week, right, I think we've gone for two particularly good ones. I think your Jorginho at Arsenal is a really good shout. And I think I've got a good shout here as well. An underappreciated Ross Barkley. Ross Barkley. Mm. And maybe we're a week or two too late, Rob. Maybe fans of football, Premier League fans, and I know Luton fans have appreciated him for what he's done.
Yeah.
I watch him play now for the last few weeks pretty closely. And wow, he's 30 years of age, I believe. Yeah. I think he's got 3 goals, 3 assists in a team like that, playing in the middle of the park. Not an advanced midfield position, a midfield general, one of the two holding players. He looks classy. He looks like he's enjoying being the main man, being the main man, being the star player at Chelsea and others. He always looked a little bit lost. He looked a little bit disengaged. He looks a little bit lacking of kind of insecure in some ways. I don't know, but he's mature now. He's skillful. He drives. He tackles back. I mean, his attitude is superb. His mentality looks spot on. And, you know, maybe he has been underappreciated for early parts of his career. He shouldn't be right now. Shouldn't be right now. The job he's doing for that club, and there's Andros Townsend there as well.
Yeah.
Good recruitment, of course. You've got to credit the club for bringing him in and making him the main man at the club. And my goodness, he looks classy, Rob. He looks, oftentimes, and I didn't see all of this game because the game's gone at the same time, but he looks the best midfield player in the game.
Yeah.
When he's played against some of the bigger boys playing for Luton in those games, he looks like the best midfield player in the game. So I thought about Ross Barkley a couple of weeks. Mm. The results, they've got a win, they've got a draw. He's definitely my underappreciated and deserves a mention, Ross Barkley. From a little bit lost, a little bit, Ross Barkley, to being right back in the Premier League and looking, by the way, like one of the best central midfield players, particularly English ones, in the league right now. So just loving the way that he's playing for Luton.
It's a great shout, mate, because not least because anybody could have taken him. Was it at Lyon where he last was in France? And you know, there were plenty of Premier League
clubs. Was it Nice?
Nice, I think. Yeah, you might be right.
Nice might have been.
Well, a few English players. We were in Kasper Schmeichel, I think, and one or two others were there. And it was one of those where I think people looked and everybody sort of said, I think he's 30 years of age, he's done now. No heart, is he going to have the job? Well, Rob Edwards has pushed the buttons. We know he's got talent. He's come out. And as you say, listen, he's against Bruno Guimarães against the Newcastle game. He was a wonderful player for Newcastle. I'll tell you what, there ain't much between the two of them. There ain't an awful lot between those two. So, yeah, it's a really good shout.
No.
And he's the sort of player who one or two, I think, would be looking at envious eyes because he could still do a job in other teams.
Could have had him.
Brilliant for Luton. He looks really committed. He looks like he's enjoying his football, which is a really important thing. Great shout, Ross Barkley, Musty's underappreciated performer of the week. Mate, let's move it to the Amex. It's a big local rivalry. It's Brighton facing Crystal Palace. If there's one game that Palace want to win all season, it's Brighton at home and Brighton away. Didn't go to plan. Brighton, having got beat 4-0 by Luton, put four goals past Palace. Early header from Dunk sets the tone. Hinchelwood with a header in the far post. And Buonanotte with a lovely finish. Put them 3-0 up at half-time. Mateta pulled one back into the second half before Pedro scored a beautiful goal. I think it's 17, 18, something in all competitions now for Pedro. Some detail, a little bit of detail in this one, Rob. It was a Palace team that didn't really start the game well. 3-0 down at half-time. Michael Olise was on the bench as he wasn't involved. However, apparently Roy Hodgson spoke to the medical people. They said, they asked how Olise was. I think they said he's 45 minutes in him, so he made the change. That lasted 9 minutes, Rob, and he had to come off with a hamstring. There was some unsavoury scenes at the end of the game between Palace fans and Palace players, and I wouldn't say it went over the top, but there was definitely disagreement. And some of the Palace fans, I think, saying, you know, you've got to do more for the shirt. If you wear this badge, it's got to mean a little bit more than what we're seeing. More kind of gossip around the Roy Hodgson situation, Rob. I just feel it's becoming really, really awkward at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question, Rob, this is an absolute shocker of a result. And the Michael Olise is such a bad look. It's such an unprofessional, Mickey Mouse flipping the dog and duck pub team type of look. It's awful, awful, where you're okay to start a player, to play a player off the bench.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Roy Hodgson's got to be able to trust his medical team, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, is there any blame on... I don't know.
We don't know. I know they're in desperate. When did the medical people say they're late? Did Olise say I'm fine?
Maybe the player.
Does Roy say, you know, I need you? Can you get out there? We don't know. Maybe that some of that might come out. Maybe not. But I just think it's another spotlight on Roy. This unrest, Rob, ain't going away unless results change quickly. I wouldn't like this to continue and Roy have to go through the last part of his career each week having to deal with these kind of situations. I would rather something mutual be done. Now, I'm not saying that that's the right decision, but when you see Roy Hodgson, a man of that standing, being affected in this way, it's not a good look for him, it's not a good look for the football club, and Crystal Palace, obviously, fans are not happy.
I think now, Rob, we're on game by game with Roy Hodgson. Mm. I mean, I got to say, I still feel, right, and listen, it, like I said, it's game by game. Mm. Surely, if the club somehow and the fans can calm a little bit and get behind the current manager, get behind the team, I feel like the more drama they create, and we know as players, Rob, we've both been in struggling teams that are having a terrible run. The more angry the fans are, the more protests there are, the more vitriol, the more oohs and ahs and boos, the worse it gets for the players and, of course, a manager in trying to do your job. Yeah, you know, they're not in a relegation. They're not in the bottom three right now. And again, it's easy for me to say I don't have a dog in this, and I'm not sure the Palace fans are very angry about what's happened. But I think it's a time for the club to stick together, to be honest with you. Now, if Chelsea, if Crystal Palace find themselves in the bottom three in the next few weeks, then I get it. Make a change, desperation time. But I still think that what's somebody else going to do, Rob? What's somebody else going to do when you haven't got Eze, you haven't got
thinking about who, and Rob, who? And we were starting to think, like, who's the firefighter? I know they got, I think it's Paddy... Now, I think, is it the guy who was in charge before? He's assistant with Roy now. He held the ranks before. I don't know if there'd be a thought about him. You're talking about who could go in for, you know, how many games is it now? 15 games and get things right. They're obviously a different team when Elise and Eze are in the side, as we saw midweek against Sheffield United.
And that doesn't change, Rob. When those two can't change.
You know, and when they don't play, it becomes a little bit more ordinary. But listen, the Palace fans are fans who get behind the team and really support them. We've known about the atmosphere at Sellers Park. So obviously there's a real disconnect at the moment. And important week for Palace and the ownership group and the manager just to try and stick together and get through some difficult times. And for Roy to finish his career managing, if this is going to be the end of it, some way that he can get a little bit more enjoyment than what we saw at the Amex. But good response for Brighton having got 4-0.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to add there, you know, of course this is, you know, I'm sort of suggesting the fans kind of get behind. Yeah. I understand the game against Brighton. I understand that's not acceptable. Yeah. That's a natural reaction. Mm. I would just, you know, I don't know. I just think the best way forward, that's probably the best way of doing it. The best way to help this club now is to stick together and to change the flipping... the vibe around the place and get behind the team, because I tell you, without Eze and Elise, it's not going to be easy. Yeah. Anybody coming in is not going to be playing silky football and play yourself out of this trouble and into Wonderland. It's going to be a grind. And Roy Hodgson is not a bad grinder. And he had a result last time before this one. I just think that would be the better way to go. And just on Brighton, Rob, their last defeat, I think Deserby said the biggest defeat. That was some reaction. Performance at Luton. They got beat by Luton. Mm. That was some reaction. And those young players, we talk about young players at Manchester United. Mm. Brighton have still got, you know, they've got João Pedro and Buonanotte and Jack Inchwood. Yeah. We talk about underappreciated teenagers, players and players to watch, particularly Inchwood and Buonanotte. Mm. Typical Brighton signings. They brought another one from Argentina in the window, by the way, which I haven't even had a chance to look at yet.
Yeah, he's a left.
The recruitment's
left,
pretty good.
Left-footed. Is he a left? Fullback, apparently incredible.
Yeah.
Let's move to Turf Moor, shall we?
Good reaction from them.
Let's move to Turf Moor. Quick on this one. Burnley 2, Fulham 2. Fulham go 2-0 up. Poligno, Muniz with the goals. And then Dacho Fofana, on loan from Chelsea. Got a couple of goals late on for Burnley. Really important 90-plus 1 minutes equaliser for Burnley. So good comeback point for Vincent Kompany and his team. Obviously, real disappointment for Marco Silva. Go 2-0 up. But they did get Broglie on the pitch. I think he came on late on to have a little bit of run around. So that's going to be exciting to see him, how he fits. Can he be the new Mitrovic for Fulham, Rob? I'm going to be interested to see how he does. And, you know, just on the basis of knowing he's going to play every week and he can start to get his head on getting some regular Premier League football. So I think it's a really great loan move for Fulham.
It's a great loan move. I think they're paying £4 million, aren't they? £4 or £5 million, depending on appearances. It goes down the more he plays.
Yes, the more he plays.
Yeah. Mm. So that's a really good move. And so is Dacho Fofana, by the way, on loan from Chelsea for Burnley. I mean, that, you know, if you look at the league table now, they're still, what, 7 points from safety. I like the signing for them as well to try and do something going forward. They think they've got some nice, clever little midfield players, but maybe he can spark something. Of course, very difficult from that position now. They've got to go on some run to get out of relegation zone. But there's two clubs, Rob, that are, you know, looking for strikers, and they've actually found one.
Each
found a striker. But Brozier is particularly, you know, he was excellent at Southampton, Rob, wasn't he?
He was excellent.
He looked
there,
a bit of a beast of a player.
Yeah.
Loved him there, and he's just lost his way a little bit. He had a bad injury that he's back from now. So, yeah, good work from both clubs and good result. And we'll watch how the teams and how these strikers do going forward.
In the final game at Vitality, Bournemouth 1, Nottingham Forest 1. Clivett with an early goal for Bournemouth. Hudson-Odoi with an equaliser for Forest. And on that game, Philip Billing came on. I think he was on the pitch about 30 minutes, had a red card. Looked like it was one of them, bit of a clumsy challenge. I was a little surprised he got a red card, but he went down the back of somebody's sort of back of the ankle, Achilles, but it kind of looked like a foul. But I was a little surprised it was a straight red card.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, there's a zillion games. Yeah, it's hard to watch every incident of every game. But I saw the highlight, and I saw Philip Billing kind of reach and trip him up on as he's breaking away. He reached onto the back of his foot and brought him down. And then I saw a red card. I'm like, what? Oh, was that his second? It was second yellow card. But it was a straight red, wasn't it? I checked, and it was a straight.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, there was no excessive force there. It was.
Felt a bit weird.
Let's not get into it. But
it's maybe one you can
weird.
Appeal.
Yeah, with you.
We'll see if the FA turn it round. But
maybe.
Well, big weekend of goals, mate. I'm in studio tomorrow with Danny Higginbottom, Brentford play Manchester City. That's 2 p.m. Eastern on the USA Network. But that's it for this poddy. We've had a weekend full of goals when Arsenal won the big match at the Emirates. It's very relevant to the title race. Brighton beat Palace. Villa got victory over Sheffield United. And it was a young Manchester United scorers who got the points for them today and take them 6th in the table. We'll be back next Sunday, that's February the 11th, when we'll recap match week 24. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Good night.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, ofoxaliner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
When you buy a new house, you might say,
shut the front door!
Winning!
No, seriously, shut the front door. We own this house now.
But you actually need to say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. The local State Farm agent is there to help you choose the coverage you need.
Welcome to my crib. No one says that anymore, but I don't care.
So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.